Are you known to be an honest person or a dishonest person? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas. I begin with a rather blunt question today. Are you known to be an honest person or a dishonest person? The lesson this week actually looks at the question of honesty as a personal characteristic, but particularly the question of honesty between us and God. I'm happy to have as my conversation partners Matilda Fry and Brant Berglund again. They've been with me for a number of weeks already and will be continuing on. But what do we do with this thing about honesty? And I think that the lesson would particularly have us look at the life of Abraham, who I think is a prototypical pilgrim. And maybe I should just make a point here that I'm intrigued when I read the Bible that human beings tend to have one of three reactions to the Word of God. When we know that God has spoken, one of the tendencies is to do what we read about in Romans 1, where we subvert it and we ignore it because it's inconvenient. And so if we do that, we enter into this kind of downward spiral into ignorance of God and the things of God. And you know, when you read that passage in Romans 1, it's kind of scary. The end of it tells us that God finally abandons people to their own ways and their own thinking, and that's pretty grim, history would suggest. So that's one. The other one is the second possible reaction is one I think is reflected in Luke chapter 3 in a way, that sometimes when human beings find out that God has acted in their midst, they tend to sanctify it. They sacralize it, and they want to turn it into an orthodoxy that has to be forever preserved. And you know, an orthodoxy is an interesting thing because it becomes a shrine of its own, and you're not allowed to touch it. And I whenever I think of that, I think of the what Luke talks about in chapter 3, where he lists all the big shots of his time: Tiberius Caesar and you know, various governors, and then comes down to Annas and Caiaphas in the church or the temple. And you know, when you read that list, you think, wow, these are the people on whose side the future lies. This is where God is going to show up if he's going to do anything in this era. And then you come to the shocking verse, the next one, which I think is verse 4 or so. It says, but the word of the Lord came to John the Baptist in the wilderness.
In the wilderness, right.
And suddenly you realize that the orthodoxy that was created in that era was completely bypassed by God, and he shows up in the wilderness. Okay, and you remember the message of John the Baptist when he comes back to the orthodoxy, and he says what? I have bad news for you, that your orthodox tree is going to come down. The axe has been laid to the root of the tree, and of course that's a very shocking thing. So that, I think, represents the second possibility of human reaction to God at work. But the story of Abraham intrigues me because I think he represents the third one, where when the word of God comes to him, he leaves his established place and he goes out to wander across the face of the earth as a pilgrim, living based on a promise, traveling to where the place God is going to show him. And I refer to that as a pilgrim mentality. The one is a rejection. The other is an orthodox opinion. The third one, I think, is a pilgrim one. And I think that is the kind of attitude, a frame of mind that the Bible upholds as ideal, especially when you come to like Hebrews 11, where you have a whole recitation of people who lived as pilgrims. See, but in that process, we are called to be honest with God in particular. So I don't know, I've talked quite a bit here. I don't know if you have any reflections, especially on the, how do we see honesty or integrity exhibited in the life of Abraham, who is the prototypical pilgrim?
I would say Abraham, in the way his life is depicted in Genesis, in reference to God, we see him as a very faithful, responsive person. I think he has some areas with honesty in response to certain people,
but not so much with God. Yeah.
Yes, where he needs to learn. Just think of his way, how he deals with his wife Sarah two times, in response to Pharaoh in Egypt, yeah. and then Abimelech, the other king. Also,
he did that because he was afraid of Matilda.
He did?
I think so. You know, I heard him once described as the father of three generations of liars because of that story, you know, and then his son lies and his grandson lies.
So, he was afraid of his own life. He put the life of his wife on the line, though.
Yes, he did, but he was afraid for himself, and so he was willing to put her at risk, which we don't admire.
Right. So he has areas in his life, I believe, where he is asked by God to learn through the process. And those lessons are not easy for him.
And his wife is grateful that God intervened in both those cases, right?
Yeah. Then the lesson mentions Genesis 22, where he is to offer his son Isaac. Now that is the great ending story of his life, where he follows. He does not ask why do I have to do this. He follows God. He's not that way. For example, he bargains with God when it is about Sodom and Gomorrah, for example.
Oh yeah.
But what intrigues me on the Genesis 22 story is the one that goes before. And it seems that it introduces Abraham into the final grand place in his life up on the mountain of Moriah. In the story before, he is in a fight with Abimelech down in the valley. And Abimelech comes to him and says, now you need to be with me honest first.
Okay.
And apparently there Abraham had an issue, because Abimelech asks, swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me or with my offspring. And then they come to make an agreement, they make a covenant, and at the end it seems the issue is resolved. And only after that God calls Abraham and says, now offer your son. So is it possible that God takes Abraham through stages in life, through certain points and moments where he is first to resolve things down here before he can get up there to the mountain?
Now, was offering a son an unusual thing in ancient times as a sacrifice?
I think it was unusual, but it was done.
It was known.
Where we have child sacrifices records of that in the biblical story and outside the biblical story.
And the reason for human sacrifice, this was the ultimate sacrifice that a human being could make to appease the god, so to speak?
In the Canaanite religions, it would have been. And we are still very shocked by the request that God makes.
Yeah, and see, that's what I'm driving at here. that, how do we understand the story? Because in one way, Abraham would not have been surprised by the request, because the other deities were presumed to make these requests, right?
But we have a challenge here in this passage, mm-hmm. because the passage begins by saying God tested or tried Abraham, but then it says, take your son whom you love, and this is the son of promise, and the book of Hebrews in the New Testament gives a later interpretation of that passage in chapter 11, saying by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son.
So what kind of cognitive dissonance does that create, Brent?
Yeah.
He has a son that God has promised
child
me
of promise.
Is born by a miracle, and now I'm going to sacrifice him? How does that fit?
Well, the book of Hebrews goes on to say, it was he of whom it was said, in Isaac your descendant shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received Isaac back as a type. So in his heart, he had already done what God had asked, and he received him back. Then when God said, you don't have to kill your son, it was like a resurrection from the dead. Abraham came through faithfully doing what God asked, even though he never had to go through it physically. He had already gone through it mentally. He had already taken the life of his son.
I mean, when I read that story, and I'm a father of two sons, and I read that story, and I think to myself, what kind of journey was that?
Yeah.
Because when did he know he was going to offer his son? Right from the beginning.
3 days they walked together.
Yeah.
And the 3 days up there are only interrupted by a few words in the story.
Oh, really?
Father, my father, where is the there, animal?
Yeah.
And then the father responds, my son, God
will provide.
Otherwise, you can watch them walking in silence, contemplation.
But the young man knowing that something big was on the father's mind, for sure.
Yeah.
Wow.
Abraham was honest, though, in the end, because his son is willing to also go in with his father and take the binding.
And that's another interesting piece of the story, because he was a young man, he could have probably turned his father on his head and walked away.
Perhaps his father was a strong man.
Perhaps he was, but I mean the son agrees.
According to the years that seem to be recorded there, he was not a child anymore.
No, he wasn't.
Abraham is an honest steward, though. He's been entrusted with this son of promise, and he cares for him.
Yeah, and I think also about what kind of relief must have flooded over Abraham when he raised the knife and it was stopped, and then he saw this ram in the thicket.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Amazing.
He must give up even the son of promise so that it is truly only promise and God's gift in the end.
Yeah,
and that is probably why the writer of Hebrews makes it as a point to say this will become a type for the Son of God.
Mm-hmm. So what do we learn from this? I mean, what's the takeaway for those of us who live today?
Well, the rest of the Old Testament law speaks about the firstborn belonging to God, and Israel had to redeem the firstborn. We think of our tithe, that whatever God gives, it's recognition that God owns it. Even our children are from God. They are His to ask for or not, and we are to give when He asks.
Oh, yeah. So in other words, you're saying that one of the foundations for this whole idea of tithing, the Bible links to that whole issue. So Isaac was to be the tithe of Abraham? I don't know.
Of his womb.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Of his wife's womb, yeah.
It's a difficult story, but it does represent the faithfulness, and I suppose we could say the honesty of Abraham that is worthy of emulation, especially when you bring in there, Brent, about it being a type that kind of is a paradigm that everybody's invited to fit into. Wow. Well, the lesson also talks about tithing, the idea of giving 10% of what you have back to God, but we'll have to save that for another day. In the meantime, thank you very much for your contributions today. The story of Abraham and Isaac, I think, is a very difficult story, but of course other chapters in Abraham's story are difficult as well. But thank you for your contributions today. Our thanks to Jared Miller, our program engineer. And our thanks to those of you who listen to Good Word. For the Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.